The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Hey, Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, how was your new year so far?
So far, so good. Some exciting college football, and now get to talk about our favorite Marquette basketball.
Yeah, so hope your 2018 is off to a good start, and we're hoping Marquette can get its 2018 off to a great start, although the schedule does not seem to be working in its favor. But we're going to break that down and look at the next few games, particularly the two coming up this week against Providence and Villanova. And we're also going to look at maybe talk about Marcus Howard. He's in a bit of a funk. Should we be concerned, or if it's just a blip on the radar? We'll look at the Big East overall a little bit as well. But Phil, first let's talk about the past four games, because we kind of took a break for the holidays. Especially the last two, Marquette off to a 1-1 start in Big East play, a loss to Xavier, a hard-fought game. I thought they played really well in that game, even though they came up short against a Xavier team that's still in the top 10 in the country. And then a relatively convincing win against Georgetown, and I say convincing meaning the win was never in doubt, even though it was kind of an ugly game. What did you take out of the last few games, particularly the last two?
Well, I think the one thing I take away, and there's been paint touches and a few others, Rob Lowe and a few others have tweeted about it. The defense, while not awesome, is certainly trending in the right direction. You know, Georgetown is a pretty awful offense, so you should be able to have good defensive performances against it, and thankfully Marquette did. So I think the defense is improving, or at least trending in the right way, maybe not as fast as necessary. And defense was always going to be the concern. The offense is, I mean, as we saw against Xavier, we basically got into a shootout. And quite frankly, we were a minute away from being in a really, really tight game. Kind of almost literally the ball bounced, the wrong direction for Marquette on a couple of plays that meant the difference between a 4-point loss and a maybe a last second attempt to win. But I think overall I think the team is ahead of where I thought they would be going into Big East play.
I'd say there are maybe about where I expected, but I do kind of agree cautiously that the defense is improving. It's not like it's light years better than it was at the beginning of the season, but if you're asking has it gotten better or worse since then, I think the answer, if you're choosing between those two, is quite obviously better, because I don't think it's gotten worse since then. I think maybe Froehling has helped out with a little size down low, and I think some of the other, especially some of the younger players are contributing more, especially Elliott and Kane, as far as I know. Anonymous Eagle likes to call them the Condors because of their wingspan, and I think that's appropriate. But yeah, But I agree with what you said about the Georgetown defensive performance. It should have been good, but I don't think there's any reason to put an asterisk by it because Georgetown played poorly. But because you're not going to put an asterisk by it if a team plays above its head or plays really well, because that goes into your stats as well. So Georgetown did not play well. They turned the ball over a bunch, but I think you can at least give some of that credit to the way Marquette played. I think they frustrated Georgetown's guards quite a bit, even though again talent wise, I thought that was a bit of a mismatch. So hopefully that trend does continue a little bit. Again, I'd never expect this defense to be a top 100 defense, but if it can just be maybe a little north of 150, that
competent.
Might be good enough.
Again, the bar is competent, right?
Right, yeah. We just want it to be not a disaster. And I think maybe it is trending in that direction. As we're recording this on Sunday night, it is right at 150 in the country. If it can improve slightly, get maybe closer to the 140s, maybe sneak into the 130s. Maybe that's something you can live with if the offense can still perform at a high level. And over these last couple games, Phil, as far as the offense performing at a high level, Rousey has been shooting the ball. He's been shooting the ball a lot, but he's been scoring a lot of points, so that's been good. The one maybe slight concern I have over the last couple games is Marcus Howard. Not that he's been bad, but maybe not quite up to his usual self. And maybe he had set a high bar for himself with that hot streak he had between Chicago State and American. That kind of stretch there where he was playing really well. Any concern on your part about Marcus Howard going forward? Is it maybe just a little funk that probably will forget, hopefully, in a week or two?
No, I'm not concerned. I think there's two parts to it. One, I think, is a funk, a little bit of a, you know, because he's had open looks and he just hasn't converted that. That will come back, right? That is regression to the mean, so to speak. But I also think that the teams are changing their defense to take him away a little bit. They're putting longer guards on him, which is maybe frustrating him. But I mean, if you look at it, it's purely funk. He had, like, in the Xavier game, one of the bad breaks was he had a wide open look for a layup to tie the game up.
Yeah, that was an out-of-bounds play that I thought Wojo drew up a very good play, and it was a good look, and you got exactly the shot you wanted. He just didn't finish it. And then you mentioned a minute ago, yeah, like there was a bad bounce that like it bounced like right towards Hauser, I think, and then it bounced away from him, and it ended up as a three for Xavier, and that was pretty much the game. But, yeah, I think that's what you're talking about there.
Yeah, exactly.
He missed some layups, and just one thing I do wonder about Howard. Now, he had like a cut, like in practice, right? Like he knocked heads with somebody and he got a few stitches. I do wonder if just a little bit that's thrown him off around the rim, because he has missed a few layups and he's maybe avoided contact a little bit. There was that chase down block in the Xavier game where I thought it was kind of garbage on one end. Because was it Makura chased down Howard and got the block, and then he came down the other end and Hauser got a block, but they called him for a foul for a similar contact. But you know, that on that play though, Howard was kind of going away from contact while whoever was making the shot for Xavier kind of leaned into the contact and got the foul call. I do wonder if he's not saying he's off a ton, but maybe just having those stitches in and having that minor injury is just throwing off his psyche just a little bit around the rim. Because, you know, 3-point wise, yeah, he was off in the Xavier game, but, he came back to kind of closer to what you'd expect from him in the Georgetown game, going 3 of 7. So I just wonder if maybe if I'm trying to pinpoint something. Again, maybe sometimes you just can't explain a funk. It's just a funk and it goes away. But if you're maybe looking for a reason about maybe what might be up the last couple games, I do wonder if that contact and those stitches maybe got in his head a little bit.
Yeah, I certainly think so. And listen, I wouldn't want to be the team playing against him when he comes out of the funk, because he's going to come out with a vengeance, to be sure. When the shots start falling, it's going to kind of the rim's going to be appear to be 10 feet in diameter for him. Maybe hopefully that's against somebody like Villanova, and certainly would be nice to have it against Providence on Wednesday. But yeah, I guess overall, to the heart of your original question, is I don't have any concerns about Marcus Howard. Like I said, I think
I really don't either. Yeah,
I think some of it is their game planning. You know, they're putting longer guards on him, which, okay, that's fine. That allows Rousey to have, you know, what was it, 33 points against Georgetown and 24 or 25 against Xavier, right? So there's other players from an offensive standpoint. If Marcus is off, then there are other players that can step up and take on the scoring load if necessary. Now, the one concern is that Marcus still continues to have trouble with fouls. I don't know how they fix that or when they fix that, but that's definitely going to be something that needs to be resolved down the road, because, you know, you're not going to win, you know, the top half of the Big East or against teams in the top half of the Big East with your best or second best player, you know, only playing 20 minutes because of foul trouble every game.
In his defense, there were some fouls called on him that were absolutely brutal, particularly in the Xavier game. So I don't think it's necessarily a case of Marcus Howard making dumb mistakes that's getting him in foul trouble. Because, you know, when it's only five to foul out, when you get two terrible ones, that really changes a lot.
It's fair. And,
yeah, so I don't think I'm not concerned about him committing too many fouls. I'm concerned about him being called for too many fouls. Again, I'm not really one to blame officiating, but boy, that Xavier game was awful.
It was really bad, and I was avoiding bringing that up because I kind of went on a Twitter rant about it. But yeah, it was, well, you mentioned it's one thing if the officiating is like bad in both directions, but just someday in our lifetime, I would like to get home cooking. I would like to get bad officiating in our favor.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But yeah, again, I hate like blaming officiating for losses, but man, there was definitely a shift in that Xavier game. Like I said, with Howard having some fouls, and maybe that could contribute to his funk a little bit too if he's not playing, right?
Right.
Shooters need to be on the floor, need to be in a rhythm, so that could also be another thing. So, yeah, I don't want to dive too into it, but I'm hopefully officiating is a little more fair in his favor, Marcus Howard's, in the next few games, and he can just be on the floor more and get in a rhythm, and then, you know, he'll be just fine. You know, Phil, you mentioned other guys stepping up and shooting. One guy that has stepped up over the last couple games, how about Jamal Cain becoming another, maybe a fourth three-point threat? Paint Touches has dubbed Rousey Howard and Hauser the Trey's Amigos, which I kind of like. But he may have to expand that to four the way Kane has been shooting the ball the last couple games. I mean, he's up to a 43% shooter on the year. Granted, a bit of a small sample size, just 12 of 28. But as he's gotten more playing time since Hanif Cheatham has left, I think he's starting to find a little confidence in his shot. And if there is now a fourth guy that Wojo can trot out there who can hit threes at 40% or better, that could bode very well for Marquette and Big East play, because a lot has been made about what, you know, how much of the scoring load depends on those three guys, Howard, Rousey, and Hauser. And, you know, I'm fine. Honestly, it's fine depending on three guys as opposed to needing just one guy. But it is nice when you can have a few other guys who can step up when, say, maybe Marcus Howard is in foul trouble, or maybe somebody gets hurt, or somebody else is in a funk and it's just not there. So I think that's been one of the pleasant surprises over the holidays here, is maybe Jamal Cain starting to find some confidence, particularly from behind the arc.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about Jamal Cain, and I didn't have him pegged as a three-point shooter, and like you said, it's a small sample size, so maybe he's not a full-fledged three-point shooter yet, but what I think has been impressive as the success has come in these couple of games, he's not, and I've kind of been paying attention to where he's getting the ball on the offensive end. He is not trying to do things as he's seen shots go in. He's not trying to do things outside of kind of the core of what got him the success. And what I mean by that is where he's been hitting threes has really been corner threes off a kick from a slash into the lane where his guy's gone to help, so he's got some extra room. You know, he's looking to be aggressive on the offensive boards. You know, he a couple of times had three open looks from three, maybe the top of the arc or the elbow arc extended, and chose not to take those shots, again, because I think he's trying to play within himself, which is kind of a high level of maturity from a freshman. So it's I look to see him continue, because his length from a defensive standpoint is invaluable. So if he can bring extra defense while maintaining this high level of offensive capability, that's going to bode very well for the team down the road, and is probably in some small way correlated to the overall defensive trend. Both he and Greg Elliott are helping that defense, and certainly Froehling as well, helping that defense improve.
Yeah, I mean, if he can defend well and make threes, he's going to have a spot in Wojo's rotation for, you know, as long as he's at Marquette. I mean, three-point shooting is something obviously Wojo has put as a priority in guys he recruits, at least on the wings and at the guard spots. But, you know, one of the things Marquette needs is defenders. And so if he can provide something that Marquette favors and also something that Marquette desperately needs in defense, he's going to have a role. And who knows, you know, as we go into next year, he may be able to carve out a starting spot for himself. But he's definitely kind of carved out a niche on this team so far with that three-point shot. Hopefully that continues to come around, because Marquette's really going to need it over the next two or three weeks, or really all through Big East play, if they're going to make any noise, because it's going to be kind of a critical stretch coming up here in the next few weeks. But those are the kind of couple takeaways. One other thing I want to get in here as far as takeaways from last few games before we move on to the upcoming schedule, Phil, is now we've seen four games with Harry Froehling in the lineup. Now, although watching FS1, I guess there's some confusion if it's Frowling or Froehling or Frawling. I'm pretty sure it's Froehling.
Yeah, that's the way I understand it.
I believe it's Harry Froehling, but I'm pretty sure it's not Frowling, although I've heard that a few times. But anyway, Harry Froehling has, you know, he hasn't had a huge impact, I would say, but I think he's still kind of maybe finding his role on the team a little bit as far as how many minutes he's getting and still, I think, trying to find that three-point shot, which is a weapon I think Wojo would like for him to have, or at least have to the point where it has to be respected, where he can stretch out a defense. What are your takeaways from the limited minutes you've seen from Froehlich so far?
Well, I think people's expectations. He had a couple of games, especially the game against Xavier. He played fairly well, kind of came back to form against Georgetown. He played well against American. And so folks kind of got real high on him, and then he didn't play as well in Georgia. And when you think about it, he's playing maybe what is his 12th or 13th collegiate basketball game at this point in his career. So he's still trying to get it all figured out, get his feet under him. I think it's interesting that he basically, the way it looks like, is that in crunch time minutes, it's going to come down to who's playing consistently better defense, him or Matt Helt, in terms of who's playing the five right now. Because they've been moving Froehlich mostly to the four. But like in the Xavier game, he in the crunch time minutes, he was playing the five and Hauser was playing the four. So I think his defense is better than I would have thought, but I think his offense has struggled more than I would have thought. I actually thought they would have been reversed, that his offense would have been fine and his defense would have taken some effort there. So, I don't know. We'll see. What do you think, Joe? How have you been impressed by him?
He really hasn't been paired with Helt very much at all in limited playing time. Seems like he's mostly out there with John or Hauser.
Correct.
He's basically been swapped out for Helt most, which I guess seems fine to me. I think the phrase people throw out there is getting his legs under him, and I think that's kind of a misnomer because he's in shape.
Right.
It's not like he's not in shape.
Right.
I think it's a mental thing as far as getting his legs under him. Like, you know, he's been doing as many wind sprints as anybody else on that team over the last year and a half. It's more about getting used to game speed and also just kind of finding his niche on the team and knowing where his teammates are going to be when he's looking for them. And he has shown to be a pretty decent passer for a big man. Again, limited minutes, but I do think he has pretty good vision in that regard. And I think that's going to help as far as, whether it's guards cutting to the basket or finding them open on the wing for open threes, which is something he's definitely going to need to do on this team. I agree with what kind of Wojo said in one of those last interviews he had before Froehlich. I think it was after the Wisconsin game. He said that Froehlich has a skill set that no one else on the team has, and that's certainly accurate as far as a very good passing big man who can stretch the defense out, because that's just really not something John or Helt do. I mean, those guys are both strictly interior players, which is fine. Everybody needs a role. But Froehlich, when he's out there, I thought that was good in that first game he played. It was the first game he played, he hit a three, I believe. Or no, it was the second game. It was the second game he played. Yeah, but I think it was good that he hit that, just so that's on tape, and maybe people have to respect it a little bit and know he's out there. But the thing is, he's only one of seven on the season, so it's still kind of in the stage where I think teams, when he gets the ball out there, are kind of have the mindset of, all right, go ahead and try it if you want, and then we'll see what happens, because right now you're at one of seven on the year. But if he can knock down a few more and force teams to respect that three-point shot a little bit more when he's out there, that just opens up that much more for guys like Hauser or if Rousey and Howard want to cut to the basket. So he is definitely going to add something, and we may not see the full complement of what he can offer this team until we get into February, maybe, when maybe his role in the rotation is carved out and solidified a little bit more. But, yeah, again, in limited minutes, I certainly like what he brings, because he brings something that is certainly unique for his size and skill set.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he's certainly putting more on the table than he's taking off. So I don't know that the demise of Matt Helt is imminent at this point. I don't think that Froehlich is going to take all of Matt's minutes and kind of run with it. But I certainly think you're going to see, especially matchup dependent, because he is kind of one of those like Hauser. Those two guys have skill sets that allow them to play in different rotations that give Marquette, you know, a different set of looks. that maybe teams haven't gotten used to. It comes with growing pains. There was certainly some, I think it was in the Xavier game, it looked like Marquette was going to go to some sort of 1-3-1 or something like that on defense, and Kane and Froehling got confused on who was doing what and what was going on, and basically it was the, as someone said, the vaunted 0-0-5-0 defense that resulted in a made basket, and we never saw it again.
I definitely remember the play. So I think it was Paint Touch just got a screenshot for us, and it was like, yeah, all five guys were around the perimeter and nobody was in the paint. Like, Wojo scrapped that right away. It's like, all right, we're going to go back to the drawing board on that one. We're not going to bust that out again in this game. So, yeah, it gives you some things to experiment with, I suppose, and maybe we will continue to see a little more experimentation this year with what Froehling can bring when he's in the lineup. But
I'd be interested to see what it, like, do. Can we go to, like, and maybe it's counterintuitive of where basketball is going with the you know, with the kind of the death lineups where everyone's playing small, but could you go
to positionless basketball?
Positionless,
right?
Basketball, yes. But could you go to a kind of like a big lineup where you're something like, you know, let's say Marcus, Kane, Hauser playing the three, Froehling at the four, and Theo John at the five, or something like that.
Probably not, honestly, because, again, you probably get torn up by smaller, quicker teams who are not playing a lineup that big, but maybe if you're just in a, like, end-of-game situation where you're desperate for a rebound, maybe that would be an option. But,
I mean, if you could do, like, a 1-3-1 or a 2-3 out of that, you know, with that height, Marcus being the one short one on that, with that kind of height, that would be pretty impressive.
I guess it would have to be a matchup thing.
Yeah,
like, if you were to face Purdue again with those bigs, then maybe that would be something you would try, something like that, just to match up with all the size they have, because obviously Purdue's bigs tore Marquette up. But hopefully we never see Purdue again. That was not an enjoyable experience. Speaking of experiences that are not enjoyable, let's talk about Marquette's next seven games, shall we? According to KenPom, Marquette is projected to go 1-6 in their next seven games, which would not be good. Because, you know, as far as projections go, could Marquette conceivably still get to maybe 9-9 in the season if that happens? Hypothetically, yes. But what you don't want to happen is to go 1-7 or 1-6 in this stretch, because then you're putting yourself in a position where you're basically got to go 8-1 the rest of the way. So basically what I'm saying is, even though the projections are not in Marquette's favor over the next seven games, Marquette needs to find a way to steal a couple, because then you would get in a situation where getting to 9-10 wins is very realistic. I think a few people have tweeted already that really the goal, if you want to be a tournament team over the next few games, it would be to go 3-4, and I think that would be more than acceptable, because I think if you can get to 3-4 in these next seven games, then you enter that backstretch, which is a little more manageable. Not to say it's easy, but you would be past both of your games with Villanova, you would be past both
Xavier.
Of your games with Xavier.
Yep.
And you'd have one game with Seton Hall out of the way as well. So, I mean, for those of you who don't have the schedule in front of you, here are the next seven games. At Providence, at Nova, that's this week. Then you get Seton Hall at home, then you go to Butler, so then you got a trip to Hinkle. DePaul at home is the one game Marquette is projected to win, and that's obviously a game you have to win if you want to have any hopes of the postseason at all. And then at Xavier, home against Nova. So, obviously, you don't look at any game other than DePaul in that stretch and say, oh, that's where we get a win, for sure. Because, again, Marquette is an underdog in all those games. But, you know, I look at those last two, Phil, at Xavier and Nova at home, and just look at those like, man, that's really optimistic if you want to talk about getting one of those. So I kind of back up to these next coming four here. Taking at Villanova out of the way, you know, thanks to Butler, we're going to be facing a pissed off and well-rested Villanova team on Saturday because they don't have a game between now and then. So thanks for that, Butler.
You're the worst.
I look at the two games surrounding that, Phil, as really Marquette's probably best opportunities to maybe steal one or two over the next few weeks, going on the road to Providence. Providence, Marquette, very similar KenPom-wise. Basically, those are games that are settled by who's at home, because As of now, Marquette is a 3-point underdog at Providence and a 4-point favorite or a 5-point favorite at home against Providence. So that tells you basically whoever's at home has an advantage. That just the analytics of being at home swing those games. And then Seton Hall at home is a 50-50 game. So you look at Seton Hall as a 50-50 game as really a game you should probably win if you want to maybe push your resume up a notch to that bubble area, right? Because I would say right now Marquette's still probably below that. So looking at this first game against Providence, Phil, that's where you kind of got to start. I'm not calling it a must-win necessarily. I'm calling it a great opportunity for Marquette to get above 500 in Big East play before you go forward in this really tough stretch here.
Well, I do think, I mean, it's as close to a not must win that is a must win as you can get, quite frankly. Simply because of the way the schedule shakes out and the need for those wins that in that section are going to be real tough to come by without winning at Providence. If you can't win at Providence, I think it doesn't bode well for getting other wins that you need out of there, especially if you're counting on winning three out of the seven, right? If you don't get the one at Providence, does that mean you're going to beat Butler on the road, or you're going to beat, Xavier on the road?
It just amps up. It just makes each game a little more desperate, right?
Right.
Because, it almost let's say you lose to Providence and then you go to Philadelphia and get blown out by Villanova. It almost puts, Seton Hall at home is almost a must-win kind of feel, right?
Right, yep.
Because even if, whatever the projections are, when you're sitting there at 1-3 with another tough road trip to Hinkle coming up after that, you kind of like, well, we got to get a win somewhere here sooner or later. So that's why, I think that you kind of ratchet up the pressure a little bit with this Providence game, because with every game you lose, the pressure to win one more and make up for it to try to hover around that 500 mark kind of creeps up a little bit. So I'm kind of with you. It's like, must win is an exaggeration, because so many crazy things can happen in this conference, and who knows what's going to happen between now and the beginning of March. But going to Providence again, Providence is one of those swing games, I think, when you're talking about who's going to finish in the top five of the conference and who's going to finish in the bottom five. Providence and Marquette are kind of really evenly matched, I think, as far as analytics. As we're recording this Sunday night, or Monday night, I should say, New Year's Day, Providence is 59 in KenPom, Marquette is 52. So essentially a push as far as KenPom numbers go. So you want to, if you want to move your resume up a little bit and try to get in position to make a tournament, you would love to sweep the teams that you're evenly matched with. So that way, that team you're evenly matched with, you keep them below you, and you got that much more of a chance to finish in the top five, top six. Because I think Big East, with its analytics, is certainly a team conference that is going to get five teams in the tournament, if not six. So that's why I look at this Providence game as such a big opportunity. And I know they're experienced, I know they're talented, but again, if you're cool being an NIT team, then you can say, well, it's fine if you split, lose to Providence. But if you want to get to that tournament team range, Providence is really one of those teams that you have to beat at some point, if not beat them twice.
Right. But, I think when you mentioned the analytics at KenPom, from a ranking standpoint, we're even. But if you dig into it a little bit, I think, and again, I'm the optimistic one, but I think we're at the, because it's early in conference season, we haven't seen, Providence strength of schedule isn't that great. And so we haven't seen kind of the Big East showdown really kind of settle out how good different teams are. The one thing, if you dig into it, looking at kind of the Providence is they're kind of middle of the road on offense, middle of the road on defense, right? They're, I think, 62 ranked 62nd in offense and 69th in defense on KenPom, which, as a combination,
nice,
is fairly good, right? But, they haven't had to go against an offense like Marquette's, granted. And Marquette has gone certainly against, they didn't stop Xavier by any stretch of the imagination, but they at least kept Xavier within striking distance of our own offense. So I think Marquette's ability to to outscore teams, I think serves it well against a Providence team that it doesn't look, at least on paper, like they do anything particularly well.
Yeah, I will say this. Their three-point percentage defense is really good. That's top 30. So, obviously, that matches up with one of certainly Marquette's strengths is shooting the three-point, shooting threes. So I would say that's an area where a Providence strength could play against one of Marquette's strengths. But, yeah, I would say I do see where you're coming from as far as, like, there's no other numbers, I would say, if you look at Providence's analytics, that it's a number that's like, wow, like they're a really good three-point shooting team, or they're a really good, you know, offensive rebounding team, or they get to the free throw line a lot. None of their numbers are bad necessarily,
right.
But, yeah, you see a lot of numbers here that are in the 100s or, you know, 150 on free throw rate, you know, 53rd in 3-point percentage, which is, you know, which is a pretty good number. Marquette's 19th in 3-point percentage. 2-point percentage, they're, they're 163. Marquette 2-point percentage is pretty good. They're 58. So yeah, you look at the numbers. There's a lot of advantages to Marquette, and like again, maybe nothing from Providence that really, really jumps out at you. So yeah, I see where you're coming from, and yeah, I do look at Providence. While I certainly think they're a team that's good enough to make the tournament, and they have some matchup problems they can present, because, you know, obviously Cartwright's a heck of a player. You know, he's he and this that freshman Makai Ashton Lankford has actually turned out to be a pretty good player for them. He's actually playing a little more time at point guard than Cartwright has actually, but And then they have some pretty talented bigs as well. Rodney Bullock is going to be a handful. He's been certainly, I mean, he's probably their best player, honestly, or at least one of their most efficient players. So, yeah, I mean, they certainly bring some talented players into this matchup. But I would say, yeah, there's like nothing about Providence that would make me say, oh, there's no way you can beat these guys. Because, yeah, I think it is an evenly matched game. And like I said, when the analytics basically say it just depends on who's at home, then you got to look at it and say, well, if you can go to their place and play a solid game, if Marquette can have a good offensive game have an effort like it did against Xavier,
right?
A good offensive game and an above average defense, a decent defensive performance. Then I think you could feel confident that you could go to Providence and get a win.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, it's the cliche thing to say, but this Providence game is the type of game, if you have any hope of, you know, of winning or finishing in a position to end up in the tournament, these are the games you have to win. You know, if you're not going to turn around and you're not going to lose to Providence on the road and turn around and beat Villanova on, I mean, you literally could, but it makes it highly improbable that you're a quality. If you lose Xavier tight at home and then Providence on the road, it's highly unlikely that you're going to win the Villanova, the Seton Hall, or the Xavier game, right? And that's really putting you behind the eight ball. So, and especially given that Georgia loss, and, you know, there's not anything sterling out there. So I buy the numbers that say you've got to get at least 9-9, most likely 10-8 to be locked. But you're going to have to win one or two, you know, top 20, at least one, probably top 25 game in that.
Yeah, you got to beat some good teams, right? I mean, yeah, you know, you can't just like, you know, slosh your way to 10 wins in the conference by beating bad teams. I mean, you've got to beat some really good teams.
Right.
And I think Providence is one of those teams. So that's why I look at it as a really good opportunity, for Marquette. So now we'll break down Saturday a little bit just because it's a game coming up this week. I'd be lying to you if I had any sort of optimism about Marquette going to Villanova on Saturday, because there are just a number of things going against Marquette on Saturday against Villanova. I mean, for one, they're a huge underdog on Ken. They're a 15-point dog, according to KenPom. 92% chance that Villanova wins. So there's that. Number two, Villanova is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, they're one of the best teams in the country. And number three, they have the week off. So basically they have all week to focus on Marquette and study Marquette and, I'm sure they'll be tuning in to Marquette, or at least watching Marquette's game against Providence to get a better scouting report on them, and then they'll break down film a little bit more as they head into Saturday. Oh, and oh, by the way, they're totally pissed off because they went to Butler and suffered their first conference loss already when I wasn't sure Villanova was going to even lose two games in conference play just because I think they're that freaking good. And maybe they still won't.
Right.
But they Villanova does not want to be in a position where they are 1-2 in conference play, and that would be stunning to me if that happened. Villanova is, like I said, they are just simply awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to reverse jinx this thing at all. I'm just saying it like it is. They are a top two offense. They are a top 25 defense. They are a top five effective field goal percentage on offense. They have two of the most efficient players in the country. Bridges and Brunson are both top 10 in KenPom's Player of the Year ratings. They are just so freaking good. They are what I wish Marquette could be one day. A team like this that is just so balanced and so talented and just so efficient on both ends of the floor. Yeah, I know Marquette upset them last year and crazy things happened in this conference, but it is just, there are so many factors going against Marquette in this trip to Philadelphia that I am just so pessimistic heading into it. How about you, Phil?
Oh, no, I'm 100% pessimistic. The one optimistic thing I will say is, and we saw it in the Butler defeat of Villanova, Marquette is exactly the type of team that could beat in a complete upset. I mean, it's a complete, it's not an expected thing at all, but Marquette as a 3-point heavy shooting team, if they get hot, get open looks and hit and convert those shots, that's what you need to be able to take down somebody like Villanova on the road. Having said that, I don't think there's any way it happens. I think Marquette beats Providence, but I just don't see them going into Philadelphia kind of the first, well, it's actually at home, isn't it? Or am I thinking of the wrong?
Yeah, it's going to Philadelphia. Yeah, they're going to Philadelphia.
Yeah, going to Philadelphia.
Villanova's the home team. Yes.
Yeah, Villanova's the home team. So, beating Providence and then turning around and going into Philadelphia and beating Villanova, especially with some of the young guys. I mean, that's going to be an extended road trip. That's going to kind of be the first for some of these guys other than Maui. So, I think it's going to be tough and I no matter what the outcome of that game is, unless they just look complete idiots, I don't know that there's really much in the way of outcomes of that Villanova game that would, make me change how I feel about the season in a negative way, right? That's kind of one of those, like, yeah, let's be competitive, but, I'm expecting us to lose, so I'm not going to worry.
Right, yeah, even
it.
if they go into Philly on Saturday and get blown out by 25 points, it would not, like, be a shut down the season kind of loss or anything.
Right, exactly.
Like, well, you go and you took your licks. It's really going to be more about how they play against Providence. If Marquette can get a win this week and get a win at Providence, I'll be feeling great about this week if they come out of this week 2-2 in the Big East. I'll sign for that right now. And like I said, it wouldn't even matter to me what the score is. But you referenced Butler's 3-point shooting. Yeah, they went 15 of 22, so 68% from three in that game. 15 threes. Like, that's how that's how they beat Villanova. And that's kind of like the dream game for Marquette, right?
Right.
It's the game where threes are just falling all day and you shoot, like, close to 70% from three and you shoot a lot of them. And that's something that Marquette is certainly capable of. Would they be capable of it this coming Saturday? Wouldn't bet a dime on it.
No.
I'd absolutely love to see it. But I would trade it if you can go bananas from threes on Wednesday against Providence and just beat that team. I would take that. And then just go to Philadelphia, take your licks, and come home, and then get ready for Seton Hall, which could be a critical game as far as, tide shifting in the conference. But so, yeah, is it possible? Yeah, I would say, yeah, it's possible, but, again, probably 8%, which is what KenPom has it at. So, don't get your hopes up, too. But, like, I wouldn't say it is completely impossible that Marquette could beat Villanova. Heck, we saw it last year. Marquette just got incredibly hot. Villanova missed a bunch of shots down the stretch. Granted, that was at home, but they hit some, they hit some big outside shots to make it interesting late, and they got the shots at the end to win it. So, of course, it could happen. Again, 8% chance, but
it's not
there's
nothing.
Always a chance. That's why that's why you play these games, right? Just go out and give it your best shot. But I think the bigger priority for Marquette is obviously you got to take care of Providence first. No small task. Certainly an underdog. I am got my fingers crossed that they can get that game. You know, they play Xavier, a team who people are still saying is a Final Four team. And granted, that game was at home, so maybe slight edge to Marquette in that regard of having some the home court advantage, but the officiating didn't play out that way,
right?
And then you hang with a team that most people are pegged as a Final Four contender, and if that's accurate, then what is Marquette? I mean, then they have to be at least close to tournament quality. Seth Davis did his stock watch, if you ever read The Athletic, which is, you know, he put Marquette as a team he would buy right now just because they're unranked, and he views them as a team that is good enough to make the tournament. And so that's one writer's perspective. I think he's maybe a little more optimistic than some national writers on Marquette, but to hear a unbiased person say that about Marquette's chances gives me some hope that most people see that someone like Seth Davis sees a tournament quality team in Marquette. And I think they show that they are a tournament quality team against Xavier, even in a loss. So,
right. Well, and yeah, like
we'll see how this week goes.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, near the beginning of this podcast is, you know, over the last four games, I've seen nothing that dissuades me or changes my mind around where I thought. I think this team can certainly win 10 games in the Big East. I think they're good for a top five Big East finish. So we'll see. They're going to have to prove it with Providence, and you know, who knows, maybe they're, you know, somehow catch Villanova just right and put on a great performance. But, you know, like you said, I would take a 1-1 finish this week and run with it.
Yeah. As far as predictions for the week, is that where you're going?
I'm going to predict 1-1.
Okay. I've decided maybe as a New Year's resolution, maybe I should start being more optimistic, try to be more positive on this podcast.
Yeah. That would be boring, because then we'd both be optimistic.
Well, maybe we'll just see how it goes this week, and that'll be determined how optimistic I go for the rest of the season. I'm going to say they beat Providence too. I'll say they go on the road and get a really good win at Providence, and yeah, then they go to Philly and get boat raced on Saturday. But I would be happy with that. I think it's an evenly matched game, and I think Marcus Howard has been quiet for a couple games. And I think he'll be back on Wednesday against Providence, and I think that'll make the difference. And you hit enough outside shots, and you can beat a team like Providence, and then you get that second win in the conference. And then you kind of, I wouldn't say breathing room maybe is the right way to say it, but at least you don't put any more pressure on yourself going to Villanova, Seton Hall, Butler those next three games.
Well, and like,
where
you know,
feel
we
like
said,
you're desperate for a win,
right? We said Providence is not a must win, but is pretty darn close. If you beat Providence, that Villanova game is by no stretch. Sure, would you love to win? Absolutely, but by no stretch of the imagination is that a required or mandatory win. So you're playing, and I think this is what you were driving at. You're playing kind of with house money. You're simply saying, all right, I got nothing to lose here. I'm just going to go in, play loose, and we're going to play as best we can against Villanova, and maybe something shakes out. But if you lose that Providence game, now you're kind of chasing the power curve there, and now that Villanova game takes on a lot more meaning, because that's something you need, especially given the rest of the schedule in January. So the most important game is by far the Providence game because of the schedule implications, as well as kind of just what it does for my, a psyche standpoint.
Yeah. All right. So we're both on the board with a 1-1 prediction for the week. So hopefully we end up to be correct. Maybe we'll be wrong and go 2-0 this week. How great would that be?
Oh, I'd love to be wrong. That way.
But let's not get crazy here. Let's just settle for one win this week and just get out of here with that. Hey, one thing I did want to kind of wrap up the podcast, maybe this is a bit of a melancholy way to wrap up the pod, but we did lose someone this week that isn't maybe directly related to the program or in the past since the holidays. Dick Enberg passed away just before Christmas. And again, not a Marquette alum per se, but I think he's always been kind of closely associated with Marquette because of his association with Al McGuire. They were a play-by-play team for the NCAA tournament for a long time. He wrote that one-man play on Al McGuire that's been running on campus. I don't know if it's still running right now.
I don't think it is right now, but it'll come back.
They bring it back every now and then. I just want to say, like Dick Enberg is like one of always been one of the class guys in broadcasting. And I think you ask 100 sports fans, they would all have maybe a different thing they associate Dick Enberg with. For me, I always associate him with the NCAA tournament. Like, I always love, CBS is Dick Enberg in the NCAA tournament. He always called so many games. But I think other people might associate him with the NFL. Some may associate him with Major League Baseball. He was like play-by-play voice for the Padres there later in his life. And I think some people associate him with U.S. Open tennis. I think most like tennis fans would say Dick Enberg is a tennis guy. So that's just a guy who I've always had just a lot of respect for in the broadcasting business, because anytime Dick Enberg was calling a game, it was always a pleasant experience because he's one of the best out there. And just because he always kind of had a loose tie to Marquette. He always admired our program. And so I think he will be greatly missed in the sports community as a whole, but I think maybe just a little bit more in the Marquette community, because he just had that little tie with Al McGuire there, because those two were always kind of closely related, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought this up, because two quick Dick Enberg kind of associated with Marquette things. I think where I really became familiar and comfortable with college basketball was actually listening to Al McGuire and Dick Enberg calling games. I grew up in a house that was very much football oriented and didn't care much for basketball, but I had friends that were into basketball as I was growing up, and so kind of got into college basketball. The first games I remember watching were ones called, either the tournament or regular season games called by Dick and Al, and so it kind of makes it personal for me. So I've always appreciated that connection, and I think there's a fair number of people in our generation that probably had a similar experience. That's how I got exposed to Al was hearing him announce games, because I wasn't born when he was coaching at Marquette. There's probably some people throwing their phones at the wall with that statement, but
it was 40 years ago, 41 years
that's
ago.
That's true.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a bit. But the other, this is literally a personal Dick Enberg story, is that, and I don't know if I ever told you this story, Joe, but I actually ran into Dick Enberg once at a horse racing track in Kentucky and Keeneland. I was at Keeneland. I was out in Kentucky visiting a cousin and family out there, and we were up in the sports book or whatever betting on races, and sure enough Dick Enberg was there, and I tried to covertly take a picture, and well, let's just say I was not very good at being covert after tailgating prior to the race. So he definitely saw me and said, "Hey, if you want a picture, just let me know." And so but at that point I was a little too embarrassed to take the picture, but got to meet him. He was a super nice guy. I talked to him for all of about 30 seconds. Super, super nice guy. So it's sad when you get these classic kind of announcer voices, because I don't know that we've got a generation coming up behind, maybe you got somebody like a Tony Romo or someone that's a young broadcaster that really kind of piques your interest. But Dick Yes. Enberg was one of the classic voices that just kind of knew sports, like you said. He knew everything about sports.
Exactly. And he was, he was so well-rounded that did so many sports and that so many people associated with him. And that is a funny story. By the way, I would say, if you're ever in that situation where you're, that close to a celebrity, don't be covert about the picture, because, if they see you doing it, then it's kind of weird and creepy. Just either ask for a photo or just totally let it go.
Right, exactly. but that
is a funny story. You know, what actually made me think about bringing that up on the podcast, over the weekend while I was it was cold by Texas standards, I'll say that. So I was just in my house this weekend, and I had bought a DVD, last year of Marquette's national championship game, and I've never actually seen the game. Obviously I know they won in 77, but I've never actually watched it. Like you, Phil, I wasn't born when it happened. So I was like, you know what? I got this DVD sitting here. I'm going to actually watch it. So got myself a drink, sat down, and I just plugged in the DVD and watched the 77 national championship game. And guess who was on the call?
Dick Enberg.
It was Dick Enberg. Yeah, it was Kurt Gowdy and Dick Enberg and Billy Packer. It was a three-man team. And it's like, oh, well, there's a young Dick Enberg. He recently passed away. And I just really thought, I guess this guy's always kind of been, again, loosely associated with Marquette basketball just because of his closeness with Al McGuire. And it was, you know, kind of fun during the game to listen to how fondly he spoke about Al McGuire and his respect for him and, you know, winning that game, winning the championship in his final game. And little did he know he would be paired with Al for quite a few years after that, calling NCAA tournament games. So I just thought that was cool. And, you know, again, the sports world will certainly miss Dick Enberg. So
yeah, was a young Billy Packer also a young curmudgeon on that,
yes,
call?
Yes, yes. He wasn't all that young.
That's true.
He didn't look, but Dick Enberg, he looked young, and, you know, same voice, though. You know, he had the same voice in 1977 that he did in 2017, last time I heard him speak. So an absolute classic in the broadcasting industry, and we will certainly miss him. But again, maybe a melancholy way, but hopefully in a happy way, to wrap up the podcast with a rest in peace to friend of the program, Dick Enberg. But we are looking forward to Big East play here. Again, it's a critical stretch for Marquette coming up, and we always, as always, thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. We welcome your feedback. Please hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks will be the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com, where we post the podcasts. You can please rate us and review us on iTunes. That always helps. The 5-star reviews, we greatly appreciate it. Review good comments as well. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post things on there as well. Phil, final thoughts before we get out of here?
Nope. Let's just go out and win at least one game so we don't have to panic in the next podcast.
All right. Until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.